children. What are we gonna do to show we care? How are we gonna be there for our children when they feel that life has just not been that fair?
Good evening and welcome back to Masks Weekly Radio Show on Family Matters. Mask mothers and fathers aligned, saving kids, kids of all ages and all stages for all mental health struggles, including addiction. If you know someone that needs a referral for a therapist, an inpatient or outpatient program, or any child that's still out of school that needs a school placement, please give us a call at 718-758-0400. I'll repeat the number. You may want to jot it down for yourself, a loved one, a neighbor, or someone you usually would sit next to and chill. Again, our number is 718-758-0400. Tonight, I'm not so happy about what we're going to speak about, but I am very happy to have on with us Lee Boffy, who is always available for the CLAL, and that is from her organization, The Long Short Road. Welcome, Lee. How are you?
Hi, Ruchama. Thank you. I'm well, Baruch Hashem. I really appreciate that you're having me on to discuss this topic. I know it's not an easy one.
It's not an easy one, and it's important that parents know it's a very sensitive topic. So please make sure that little kids, young adults, should not be listening to this show. So Lee, why don't you tell my listeners what the Long Short Road stands for, please?
Sure. So the Long Short Road is a mental health nonprofit. Our focus is suicide prevention and awareness and community support around that issue, which stems into many things. But the concept of the Long Short Road comes from the Alter Rebbe's Tanya. And in Tanya, the Alter Rebbe gives an analogy of a person trying to take a short, long road. So looking for shortcuts, you know, roundabout ways to get to their destination, but then inevitably having to go back to the long road and taking that long journey. And, you know, it, obviously in Tanya, it's related to Avodas Hashem, but within the long, short road, we, you know, I took it to be the mental health journey because that's, I think it's very prevalent. And the long, short road is that you take on the onset that long journey, however long it's going to take to get to your destination, but that often when you're on that path, it feels shorter than when you're trying to, you know, take shortcuts and ending up at dead ends or, you know, not getting to where you're at. And in terms of mental health and suicide prevention, you know, I mean, I'm biased because it's my organization, but I do think it's a pretty perfect name to help describe that experience and that journey of mental health and healing, because it is a long road. And we never know how long the road is going to take, however long it's going to take for each, and it's different for each individual person. But, you know, I think it does also give chizuk to know that everyone's taking, you know, when you're taking that long path, that reaching the destination can arrive shorter, you know, or faster than if you're trying to find shortcuts to circumvent real healing, which doesn't work.
Yes, and I think it's so, excuse me, important to mention that it is World Suicide Prevention Day and month and week this month, September. color code you for the Long Short Road and always being available, especially to any parent that calls and asks, struggling with a loved one that's struggling. You have always been there over the years for these families. So first and foremost, a special thank you to you.
Thank you.
Lee, it's so important to have a network and to partner to change the conversation from suicide to suicide prevention, mm-hmm. and the actions to promote the healing and give hope. So I think it's important that we speak about the firm world today. I know if I would turn on the radio and hear this show, I would like scratch my head and say, why are there conversations about suicide prevention in the firm right. community? So why don't you sadly share with my listeners, with tremendous heartbreak for you, for me, for all the people that are out there helping the CLAL in this arena, please talk about what the firm world looks like today with suicide being a huge issue.
Massive issue. And, you know, and if I'll preface by saying this, I'll share a story just to highlight this. I recently spoke at a school, and I spoke to about, I think about 400 members of the student body, like 400 students. And at the end of that day, I had a line of students waiting to speak to me, to the point where the janitor of the building asked us to leave because they had to close for the night. And I was just sitting there talking to one student after the other. And the next day I spoke to someone who's on our advisory board, and I said to him, you know, people keep asking me, is this issue as big as I say it is? And his response to me was, no, it's actually much worse than you say it is, because there's a lot of people that are falling in between the cracks that we don't even know about. And, you know, look, the same way that unfortunately in our communities we've been impacted by addiction and abuse, we are also impacted by suicide. We're not exempt from this issue in the firm community. I've been in suicide prevention for almost 10 years, and the majority of the people that I have worked with over that time are from communities, from everything from Modern Orthodox to Satmar. Like, there's no one, not one community is exempt from this issue. You know, if you look at the statistics, right, the general statistics of the population in the United States, suicide is the second leading cause of death for youth ages 15 to 25, right? Now, I honestly could not give you hard numbers from within the firm community because no one has done that research. But what I can tell you anecdotally is that the numbers are just as high in the firm community as they are in the secular world. But I do think that also this issue, we tend to not address it as suicide. So unfortunately, when there is suicide loss, we don't talk about it as that. We address it to something else, or we give it another cause. But this is an issue that's impacting our community greatly. And I've seen it firsthand, day after day, year after year, for almost a decade. And you know, I'm, so to speak, late to the game. There's people who have been in this field and have been seeing this for years. So, you know, I think it's definitely there, you know.
Right. I'm going to back up with what you're saying, because we are in our 27th year, and we at MASC have been hearing about this from day one. The numbers have just been growing, and I imagine, sadly, they've been growing also because our teens have really been through a lot the last couple years.
Yeah.
And are you seeing that as well?
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, within the Long Short Road, our support is to anyone who comes to us. So if that's a teen, an adult, you know, it doesn't matter the age or stage of life, but, you know, a lot of the people that we work with are either teens or parents of young children and, you know, teenagers. And, no, it's alarming. And I you know, someone stopped me on the street actually the other day. I was in Crown Heights and somebody stopped me on the street and she asked me, she was like, maybe you know the answer to this question. Why are people so much less resilient today than they used to be? And I don't think it's that we're less resilient. I think that there's always been difficulty, pain, trauma, but I think that this is the generation. I know this is going to sound like very Lubavitch of me, but I am Chabad. So, you know, I think this is the generation that's going to be welcoming Mashiach, and we have a lot of pain that we have to deal with before that happens. But outside of that spiritual part, you know, COVID, social media, COVID and social media are two massive factors that we look at when we're talking about teen suicide rates. There was actually a book that was just released recently called The Anxious Generation by Jonathan Haidt that talks about just how bad the detriment of mental health problems are for both men, young boys and young girls, in terms of social media and social media use. But I do also see among young people, many of the people who come to me have experienced abuse or neglect in the home or at the hands of someone that they trusted. There's also a higher prevalence of mental health conditions that go either unnoticed or not diagnosed. And so sometimes suicide will kind of be the alarm that rings out, but there's an underlying cause for that, which is, you know, maybe there's an undiagnosed mental health condition that needs to be addressed. Yeah, but I do also want to just say, as much pain and suffering and difficulty, as much as the numbers are going up, I have also seen the flip side of the hope and the healing, and that people can get better, and that suicide is not something that lasts forever. And I think that's really important, especially for parents of young people to hear, because when they hear my child is experiencing suicidal ideation, they immediately think, oh, this is how they're going to be for the rest of their life, and they're kind of just stuck in this. And that's not true. So, you know, I wanted to give that flip side as well.
Right. Thank you. Yeah, that is not true, because there are a lot of treatments and support systems that are available for right. individuals. And so let's talk first about the ask. And the ask is that we know that kids will tell their parents, oh, I want to kill myself, I'm feeling suicidal, or whatever. And parents, of course, panic right away. But if we realize the ask is for the connection, mm-hmm. for the help, mm-hmm. for the hope. Mm-hmm. So can you talk about that? How, what's available for the people that are struggling and asking?
Sure. Well, and I just want to stress that point again, that when someone, a teen or an adult, discloses suicidal ideation, that is connection seeking, right? That is a cry for help, and they're looking for that support. You know, and there's so many, I'll just preface by saying there are, Baruch Hashem, we have a plethora of modalities in the mental health field today that are so helpful. Everything from DBT and mindfulness-based skills to somatic-based therapies, combinations of therapies, you know, somatic and talk therapy together. I do really believe that one of the most powerful anecdotes and the most powerful tools for this type of connection seeking is community support programs. So that could be support groups, that could be peer-to-peer programs. You know, I'm not saying that should take the precedent over traditional mental health modalities, especially depending on the level of crisis. But isolation in any mental health condition, and definitely with suicidal ideation, is very dangerous. And we need each other, and we need community to feel less alone and to feel empowered to keep healing. Because healing, you know, we have a tagline at the Long Short Road that healing is messy, because it is. You know, you're it's not a linear straight path of flowers and roses. It can be very messy and uncomfortable. And to do that alone makes it that much harder. So whatever modality a person is seeking, if it's traditional talk therapy, if it's EMDR, if it's DBT, if it's a somatic-based healing technique, whatever it is, to also make sure that they are seeking, this is true for the person at risk and also for the families, to have some form of support network that they can lean on for this journey. Because like Hashem did not create us to walk through this world by ourselves. And that's definitely true when we're dealing with mental health, right? We need each other. So
absolutely. And that is why anyone listening to this show, if you have a loved one that's struggling with any mental health struggles, please give us a call. And we are a referral agency for therapists around the world that can help your loved one. But also, as the caregiver, the mother, the father, please call us. We have groups for the parents. And Monday night, we have Dr. Debbie Ackerman. Tuesday night, we have Dr. Shmuel Brachfeld. Wednesday night, we have Rabbi Dr. Ben-Zion Tversky. We have for single dads. We have Group Israel Isaac Facilitate for Alienation. We have Jason Blau. We have Single Moms Group in the Five Towns now with Harriet Cabelli and Dr. Miriam Gross in Crown Heights and Dr. Trisha Tia once a month in Brooklyn. Zoom groups are still available. Please pick up the phone, call Mass, so that we can be there to support you and give you the support and knowledge and understanding of whatever struggles your loved ones are going through. So let's go back, Lee, to, we know that we need to support family members, and we know that the ask is so important. I think it's also important that we all realize that once they ask, our reaction right away, we need to be very careful with how one reacts. So absolutely, let's talk about that. And it's the same with molestation.
Right.
If a child comes home and says they were touched inappropriate, you know, one would think that parents start asking 100 questions.
Right.
And we're not supposed to.
No.
So,
and it, you know, it's interesting. My first piece of advice, you know, my first piece of guidance when someone, well, first of all, I do want to highlight, because I think this is important for people to know, is that not always will a teen or an adult, not always will anyone who's struggling with suicidal ideation disclose directly. Sometimes the ask is more like an invitation to pay attention rather than like a flat, you know, straight out, hey, this is what's happening for me. There will be some times where, you know, a person will disclose directly, but not always. And the reason for that is because of the potential shame and consequences that would be associated with the ask, right? Am I going to get in trouble? Am I going to lose my job? Am I going to get expelled? Am I, you know, is it going to be harder for my siblings to get married now that this is an issue that I'm dealing with? These are all consequences that people think about before they ask for help. But to go back to your question, if a disclosure is made, my first piece of guidance is to take a deep breath and thank them for sharing this with you. Thank them for feeling safe to talk to you about this, because there's no guarantee that they're going to tell you. You know, start the conversation by just setting the tone with gratitude that you are relieved, not that you're angry at them and what's wrong with them and why are they like this, but thank you for telling me. And I'm so sorry that you're going through this, and let's figure out together how we can keep you safe. And really make it about you being a team. It's the two of you versus the issue, not you versus your child or you versus your spouse or you versus your coworker. You're in it with them. And really, the more, you know, listening and holding space, sitting in silence with a person who's struggling and letting them share and talk is way more impactful and effective than throwing a lot of questions and advice at them. especially depending on the level of crisis that they're at, they might not even have the capability physically or biochemically at that time to respond to a barrage of questions. So making them feel comfortable and safe and secure with you during that conversation can go a long way.
And we all have to remember that it's not just about asking and about keeping the connection, but it's also about follow-up.
Right. So
what do you want to say about follow-up?
Well, I would say, and this is a message also to, like, if there's any teens listening who have had friends disclose to you that they're struggling, don't wait to get help. Like, don't keep it to yourself and keep it a secret. You know, sometimes parents will tell me, like, oh, I didn't take it seriously because, like, you know, we talked about it and whatever. And, you know, then it was late at night. They went to sleep and they went to school the next day and everything was fine. You know, it's whatever steps you need to take to help them on their healing journey. So if that's connecting them to a mental health professional, if it's connecting them to a support group, if it's, you know, the follow-up could also be that connection of spending more time with them and holding, you know, being available to hold space for them. Like, it doesn't only have to be now, the follow-up doesn't only have to be, okay, now we're putting, you know, we're getting more in people involved, professionals or whoever. It's, you know, we're going to get more people involved to help you, but also I'm here for you, whatever you need. And to keep that open line of communication and compassion going. You know, as I said at the beginning, this is a long road. And very often when parents will call me, one of the first questions they ask is, so what's the fastest way to deal with this? And I feel like that's the wrong question because I don't know the answer to that. I don't know how long it's going to take, right? Working with what's underneath a disclosure for suicide is something that could take 6 months. It could take a year. It could take two, right? And it's keeping that line of connection open no matter how the journey goes. Because outside of the therapy room, right, if they're in therapy for an hour a week or 2 hours a week, they're still coming home every day and there's still a environment at home that will either contribute to their healing or take away from their healing. And that's really important to consider and think about.
Absolutely. Let me ask you, do you feel comfortable sharing a story that would give families that may be listening hope, but of course with confidentiality?
Of course.
Please,
sure.
Please change, you know, area, situation,
absolutely,
and details.
Absolutely.
Thank you. I know I don't have to say it, but I am.
I was at an event with someone who, it wasn't even, you know, the event wasn't even related to suicide or mental health at all. And we just kind of, it was a younger person, and we got to talking, and they disclosed to me that prior to coming to this event, a couple of weeks before, they had made a suicide attempt, and that there was a lot of fear around going back to their community and going back home and trying to get back into a routine when they knew that, you know, this thing had happened. And, you know, the thing that I remember the most about that experience was that I didn't try to fix or solve anything because that's not my job, but I did hold that space and also try to help them come to, you know, a conclusion about what could be done next in a healthy way to keep them safe. This person today, this was about 11 years ago or 12 years ago, this person is really, I mean, thriving is like not even the word. And they didn't even, you know, at the time, it was hard for them to imagine or believe that they would get to a point in their life where they were feeling so happy to be alive. And that's exactly how they feel today. And I, you know, that's literally one of dozens of stories that I could tell you, because I have seen that other side of people who are getting up every day, putting one foot in front of the other, living their life with whatever challenges are coming their way, but they're putting in the effort to stay here and to be here and to make a meaningful life, even with their challenges. And I, you know, I think there's something so profound and beautiful about that.
Thank you. Lee, can you maybe give parents some language that they could use when a child shares with them that they are feeling suicidal.
Mm.
That first reaction.
Yeah, my gut instinct is always to advise to err on the side of compassion and not judgment. So first of all, believe them. Believe them. And sometimes parents will say, well, what if they're doing this for attention? And it goes back to that idea of connection, right? If your child is disclosing or saying that they're suicidal because they need attention from you, then what does that say about what's going on for them? Like, what kind of connection are they really seeking, and how could you give that to them? But, you know, usually what I see to be problematic is that immediately a parent will go into problem solve, which is not a bad thing. Like, we want to solve this problem for our kids, right? We want them to be safe and healthy and strong. But not to immediately jump into like, okay, here's how we're going to fix this. And here's how we're going to get rid of this. And okay, this problem is already solved. Bing, bang, you know, open and closed case. The holding space for them and the listening without jumping to conclusions or jumping to tell them what you think about the situation or how you can fix the situation goes a long way. Because people who are in pain don't want to be fixed or have their problem solved for them. They want to be seen and held as they are. And any parent can tell you that the hardest thing to do is when their child is in pain is to just hold space for them and listen before they jump to you know, but refraining from attacking or judgmental language, right? Helping them feel that you're on the same page with them, that you're part of their team and not their enemy. You know, because you want them to know that you're in it with them for however long it's going to take and whatever it is necessary to help.
Yes, and the parent should then call MASK, and we can try and help connect you to either Lee, so long as she's available, or if you're requesting therapists, feel free to call 718-758-0400. Lee, we're running out of time. What a painful topic to have to speak about, but so important. So I want to thank you again for all you do for those that are struggling and in so much pain.
Thank you, Rukhama, and thank you for everything you do. It really, you know, I know that this, and I know that this is not an easy thing, but to know that we're in this together and that we're working in, you know, in our different ways within the community to help people who are in pain, it gives me hope for the future. So thank you. And thank you for having me on for this. I really appreciate it.
All right. Hope to have you on again soon. I want to wish everyone a very good evening, a beautiful Shabbos. And always remember, hang in, hold on, hug tight. Tonight's show is in honor of all the Chayalim. Bring the hostages home now. Please consider to go online to maskparents.org and donate so that we can continue with all the MASK programs. I want to personally thank everyone that has been donating to continue with all the programs that we've been doing. Thank you and have a good night.
Imagine a job where every day is about making a difference, where every day you're growing your career and empowering others. Direct support professionals are the champions who advocate for and support people with developmental disabilities. They are the people in our community fulfilling a calling that's more than work. Join us on a path that transforms lives, including your own. Apply to be a direct support professional at directsupportcareers.com. It's more than work. It's your calling.
Boss, we need to rebrand ASAP.
Can't be busy with that.
Our website is so outdated.
I can't be busy with that.
What about social media appearances?
I can't be busy with that.
So what's your plan?
My plan is Media Depot, known for top quality affordability and efficiency. Boy, will they be busy for me. Call them now on 855-BUSY-BIZ. That's 855-287-9249. Or visit MediaDPT.com. Remember, 855-BUSY-BIZ. We be busy for you to be able to be busy.
Call Media Depot now.
Media Depot, 855-BUSY-BIZ.